You know, it's been 5 years since Bo Dallas has wrestled a match. And for a guy who has not wrestled a match in 5 years, going out there tonight in the main event on Monday Night Raw, I thought he looked damn good. Of course, whenever you're in the ring with someone like Chad Gable, it's going to be hard not to go in there and look good or be made to look good. But no, I mean, they went out there tonight and they had a good main event. Didn't know what to expect. Been a very long time for Bo before he, last time we saw him, he was also in a very different gimmick. He was in a very different character at that time. But it was a successful debut for Uncle Howdy, who did not wrestle with any hocus pocus. There was no red light or blue light or dark lighting or mood lighting or anything like that. There were no supernatural powers. There was no selling going on or anything like that. He went in there and he had a normal wrestling match, except for the fact that he was dressed with long silver hair and he had the mask on, the Uncle Howdy mask. And in fact, Gable took most of the offense in their match. I would damn say he took the majority of the offense in that main event. But he also took another loss, did Chad Gable. And, you know, I used to call, for a period of time, I used to call Bray Wyatt the eater of pins, because he went through this period where he would talk a big talk, but when he went in there for the big match, he would always come out a loser. Chad Gable always talks a big talk and always comes out a loser, so he now takes the mantle. He takes the title as the eater of pins here on this show. Not that I expected anything different, because it was Uncle Howdy's debut, and Uncle Howdy is not going to go in there and lose in his very first match, because that would be very dumb. But he couldn't have possibly had a better opponent than Chad Gable here on this show. I did have one critique, and it's a minor critique about the Uncle Howdy getup. And it has to do with that hair. That's got to go. It doesn't work. I'm sorry. It just does not work. Well, I'll talk more about it when we get to the main event, but in the grand scheme, it's a minor point. It's the only real critique that I have. I think over time, he may tweak the appearance. Again, this was only match number one. That's one thing I would like to see him change. This was also likely Randy Orton's final night on Monday Night Raw. Again, he was not traded to Raw. He's only been making appearances on this show because he is challenging Gunther for the World Heavyweight title this Saturday in Berlin. Gunther was not on the show. He has been on WWE's international tour. But Randy Orton was. And so he was there to make the final hard sell for his match. But he ain't walking out the World Heavyweight Champion. So this was Orton's final appearance, very likely, on this show. We had two triple threat matches in the Intercontinental Title Tournament. They are looking to crown a number one contender for Bron Breakker's title. We have two next week. All four winners will then meet in a fatal four-way match in 2 weeks on Raw, and at that point, we will know who the number one contender is going to be. But I thought the two matches that we had tonight in the tournament were solid. We also had a battle of the big men. We had ourselves, the way I would describe it is we had ourselves a kaiju battle here on this show. It was Godzilla on one side, King Kong on the other. We had Braun Strowman taking on Bronson Reed one-on-one, and they had the best segment on the entire show. Can't even really call it a match because the match just sort of ended. But it was definitely the best thing and the thing that I had the most fun with on this television show. And we also had some other segments that were solid enough, nothing really special. But the key stuff on this show, I thought, delivered. I thought it was good. This was a good show. It was a good show, good main event, and a good final push heading into Berlin on Saturday, because we had one international pay-per-view yesterday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time. We have another international event this Saturday, also 1 o'clock Eastern time, that being the Bash in Berlin. CM Punk and Drew McIntyre also on this show with one final push before their strap match. We'll talk about it all because this is your WWE Monday Night Raw review for August 26th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Before we go any further, I do want to briefly address the sad news. As you saw at the beginning of the stream, or if you were watching Raw tonight, it feels like there have been a number of these stories over the last several weeks, few months. We lost both Wild Samoans in less than 2 months, Afa and Sika. Kevin Sullivan just passed away not 2 weeks ago, I don't think. Today we got the news straight from his son on Facebook that Sid Udy, better known, and he had a lot of names in his career, but better known as Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid, passed away. Passed away at the age of 63. Apparently he was suffering from cancer. I don't know all the details. I don't think that's been revealed as far as what kind of cancer, for how long. Apparently he kept it to himself and contracted COVID, and that is what ultimately led to his death. Sid is an interesting case because you have heard me, if you've listened to my show for any length of time, you have very likely heard me mention Sid here and there. I was a Sid mark. There was just something about Sid that I loved. I was a big fan of the powerbomb. I was a big fan of just him coming out there. He had such a unique look. When he would walk out there, he was a big guy. You know, he's 6'9", 300 pounds, curly hair. And, you know, great physique for much of his career. Not that he was ripped to shreds like Lex Luger or something, but he just looked like a pro wrestler. And he had a certain charisma about him that was very unique and not a lot of people had. And that, I think, is a big part of why he was able to get over everywhere he went. And that was the thing about Sid that I would point out, is that no matter where he worked, no matter what territory he was in, no matter what company he worked for, he got over every single place that he went. WCW, WWE, ECW, had a brief run at ECW. Paul Heyman knew exactly how to book Sid. He didn't have him for very long, but he knew exactly how to book Sid. The reactions that he would get every time he would come out there at the ECW arena were unbelievable. But for me, you know, when I think of Sid, I mean, first of all, the master of the powerbomb, two-time WWE champion, two-time WCW champion, two-time WrestleMania headliner, the only man to have held the Winged Eagle belt from that era when that championship was held by a lot of legends and a lot of big names, the only man to hold that Winged Eagle belt to not be in the Hall of Fame is Psycho Sid, which is pretty remarkable. I got the chance to meet him once at an appearance. I'm still pissed I didn't, you know, bring a camera or anything. I got an autograph, but got to meet him one time and see him and the Winged Eagle up close. And a lot of the stories you hear about him as far as like backstage interactions and stuff, you know, seemed like a nice guy. Everybody makes the joke, of course, Softball Sid. Different points during his career, he would disappear and people were like, where's Sid? And a lot of the wrestlers would say that he loves to play softball. He would go back home, and I guess he played in the league, and he was Softball Sid. So you hear a lot of those, you know, jokes as well. You know, when I think of his career as far as the highlight, like the in-ring highlight of his career, he was right here in New York in Madison Square Garden at the Survivor Series when he wrestled Shawn Michaels, and he won that world title for the very first time. And it was incredible because years later, you know, in the John Cena era, and even today, you will see these crowds sometimes that for whatever reason will go into business for themselves and they will cheer the person that they want to cheer for. They'll cheer for the heel, even though they're not supposed to, right? You didn't really see a lot of that. Not that it didn't happen, but, you know, you didn't really see a lot of that back then where you had these kind of renegade crowds that went off on their own. That was the first time I can honestly remember something like that in my fandom was at that Survivor Series because Shawn was the babyface. Sid was a babyface too. But they turned on Shawn Michaels in that building and there was no one who was more over in that venue on that night than Psycho Sid. And from the moment he came out, putting his fist out, you know, to fist bump people. Who's the man? Who's the man? Remember Vladimir in the front row giving him a big hug? He just had this like physical charisma about him. But people were nuts for him. When he came back in 96, they brought him back to the company when the Ultimate Warrior flaked out, as, of course, a lot of people thought he would. And they brought Sid in to take his place. And I don't know what it was about him at that time during that run, but those WWF fans, they took to him and they said, this is the guy. This guy is cool. He was so over in late 96 during that run that he had. More over then than he was at any other point during his career. That's what I will always remember about Sid. That and the leg injury, which is the worst injury I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. It's just horrific. And that was basically it for him. That was the end of his full-time in-ring career. He got back in the ring many years later, but he was never the same after that. So there's a lot of different things I associate with Sid. A lot of things I'll talk about on Sunday, I'm sure. On the podcast as well, the infamous story with Arn Anderson, there's some not so good stuff to go over as well. But he had a pretty incredible career, getting over everywhere, being a champion. And in my book, he's a Hall of Famer. He may not have had the best matches. I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you that Sid was some great in-ring worker. He wasn't. But you know what? For his role, he did his job. His role was not to go in there and do holds and submissions and things that other wrestlers could do, Shawn Michaels could do, Bret Hart could do, Kurt Hennig could do. Sid was a different kind of cat. He's a big guy whose job it was to go in there. And if anything, I would argue that Sid sold more than he should have for people, including Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and people like that. He probably shouldn't have sold as much as he did. But I will always be a Sid fan. There's something about the guy. Hard not to root for somebody like that in his prime because he was just the coolest thing. So I was very sad to hear of his passing, especially because if you have seen anything of Sid in recent years, and there hasn't been much, yeah, he's kept a pretty low profile, although he was only a few weeks ago, I think within the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, he was at a convention. You know, taking pictures with people and doing double photos, him and Danny Spivey, who used to be the Skyscrapers. So he was still, you know, out and about, but in recent years, you would see pictures of him with his grandkids, you know, him and his family, and he always had a smile on his face. And it just seemed like he was one of those guys who came out on the other end in an era of guys, many of whom did not even make it into their 50s, let alone their 60s. And there's Sid, the family man, you know, with his grandkids. But he was still only 63. That's not old. You know, when you're a grandpa, you should be a grandpa into your 70s, your 80s, if you're lucky enough, your 90s. And for him to, you know, be gone now at a time when he was just now really getting into his golden years and was going to be able to be with his family, and now he won't be, is very sad. So I will always remember Sid. And like I said, I'll talk more about him on the podcast this weekend, but I just wanted to say a few words here because I was not expecting to see that news and was very sad, especially, again, coming off the heels of all these other death announcements over the last 2 months. Hopefully this will be the last one for a while because it just feels like the floodgates sort of opened there for a bit. And it's very depressing. Corey Graves was back on Raw with Pat McAfee being overseas at the moment, but he's now doing College Game Day for the next several months, so he will not be on Raw. So he joined Michael Cole tonight. I should also point out this was Michael Cole's final Raw until January when they moved to Netflix, and then Cole and McAfee will be back on the show. But Joe Tessitore begins on Raw next Monday. At least that was the plan they announced as of several weeks ago. I think it's going to be Tessitore and Wade Barrett on Mondays, and I know Cole and Graves are going to be doing SmackDown. At least as of September 13th, that is when SmackDown returns to USA. The new, but not so improved, Judgment Day came to the ring to open the show. Finn Balor was in the ring. He said that it was time to remind people what they are all about. And then a video package recapped their attack last week on Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. Balor said that they're not the bad guys. Priest and Ripley are. Said they got exactly what they deserved. Liv Morgan said that she should be thanking Rhea because none of this would have been possible if she wasn't so selfish and egotistical. Dom took the mic to speak. He got the usual mega heat who wouldn't let him speak. He said that he was entering the tournament for a shot at the Intercontinental title. Rey Mysterio came to the ring with the rest of the LWO, and I'm not going to lie. As soon as I saw that Rey was coming to the ring to confront his son yet again, I groaned. And I just thought, must we keep going back to this? I enjoyed it before, but you know what? I'm done for now. There needs to be some separation for a while with Rey and Dom. Okay, we just need to put a period on that for the time being. But then again, on the other hand, Dragon Lee is still with us. It was nice to see Dragon Lee is alive and well, because he's been gone now for months. I don't know where he's been, but at least he was back on the show tonight, and he's going to be in a match on Raw next week. Rey called Dom a lost soul, said that at least when Dom was with Rhea, one of them had a set, and it wasn't Dom. He said his son's always been a jackass, and now he's an even bigger jackass. Now that he's hanging out with Liv Morgan, he dared Dominic to hit him and said that he would love to slap the stupid mustache off of his face. Dom said that he would like to see him try, and JD McDonagh went for a cheap shot that Rey blocked. The Judgment Day got cleared from the ring, and Dragon Lee did a flip dive and took them all out, heading into the commercial. Blech. That was my reaction to this. A very paint-by-numbers intro here to the show. It did lead into our first match of the night. Rey, Dragon Lee, Cruz del Toro, Joaquin Wilde against Finn Balor, JD McDonagh, Dirty Dom, and Carlito. There was a spot where Wilde and Del Toro, they tried simultaneous springboard drop kicks. Del Toro hit his. Joaquin Wilde slipped, unfortunately, and he fell down. But then all the LWO members hit suicide dives at the same time to all four sides of the ring, and they got this really cool overhead shot as they all dove out of the ring at the same time, so that was cool. Crowd was going wild for that. Rey hit his son with a 619. Balor, though, distracted the referee. Liv pulled Dom out to safety just as Rey was coming off the top rope with a frog splash, so he crashed and burned. Dom used the La Mahistral cradle to pin his deadbeat dad to win the match. So that's the second time now that Dominic has beaten his father with an assist from Liv Morgan. After the match, the Judgment Day placed Rey on the announce desk. Dominic set up for a dive from the top of the ring post. When the Terror Twins arrived, we had Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest. Rhea grabbed Liv before she could scamper off into the crowd, threw her into the ring post. This whole time, as Priest is wrestling the members of the Judgment Day and Rhea is going after Liv and beating her up, Dominic is still standing, perched like a gargoyle, up on the top of the ring post casing. Like he has nowhere to go. He doesn't know what to do. Until Damian Priest now is outside on one side of him. Rhea gets into the ring, and Dominic just jumps off the top rope, lands on his feet, and then realizes, oh shit, Rhea's there. So Rhea's in the ring with him. She was waiting for him. Liv Morgan goes into the ring and jumps on Rhea's back. Priest knocks Dominic down, takes him down with a right hand. Dominic and Liv end up escaping, and Rhea gives JD McDonagh a riptide, and Damian Priest gives Carlito a chokeslam to end the segment. So some fun moments in the match itself, with Priest and Rhea bouncing back after being left laying by the Judgment Day last week. So that was their last push before we get the mixed tag on Saturday. It's going to be Damian and Rhea taking on Dominic and Liv. And I'm looking forward to that because this has really been the dominant story on this show now for many months. And between the heat that they've been getting and the reaction that I'm expecting, you know, the noise and the reaction from the fans in Berlin, especially if it's anything like Backlash was, that's going to be a lot of fun. And everybody is going to be waiting for the Riptide to Dominic, which I think we get. I think we'll get that on Saturday. In the back, Kofi Kingston was with Xavier Woods. They agreed that they had been together as long as they had because they were emotionally secure, grown men who could talk things out. Now they each had a chance to bring the Intercontinental title to the New Day because Kofi Kingston was in one of the triple threat matches tonight. Xavier Woods was in the other one. We had Io Sky and Kairi Sane taking on Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. They went to break 40 seconds into this match after Sonya Deville took a cheap shot at Kairi, which the cameras missed. Kairi made a comeback after the break. Shayna caught her with a knee strike. Zoe followed with a missile dropkick. Zelina Vega, who has been off television now for several weeks with a storyline injury, ran out from the crowd, knocked down Deville on the outside. Meanwhile, Io took out Baszler with her over the moonsault on the floor, while at the same time on the inside, Kairi hit her insane elbow to Zoe to win it for damage control. That got a reaction, which is good, because the rest of this match did not. So at least the finish got a reaction. Even Zelina's return barely registered a reaction here from this crowd. Like, nobody cared. But it's a win for damage control. We got a Bo Dallas VHS promo. I wrote it down here. Always intrigued by what he has to say. This is what he said. I stopped to marvel at all of our accomplishments. Nearly stepped on a serpent. We won't make that mistake again. The false prophet continues to reveal himself to the world, referring to Chad Gable, masquerading as a loving shepherd while marching his lambs into the mouth of wolves. A bond forged in the tears of the innocent is not a family. It is a blasphemy. Or it's blasphemy. Chad, we've given you chance after chance, inflicting fear and suffering, and yet you refuse to remove the scales from your eyes. Your arrogance is like a beast risen from the sea. We must cut off the head so the blood of the damned rains down, washing away the sins of the wicked. I accept your challenge, your invitation. This is more than a reckoning. This is a purge. Well, there you go. Does that get you pumped up for the main event between Uncle Howdy and Chad Gable? Interesting fact. His match with Chad Gable tonight was actually Bo's first televised match in 5 years. It was actually the last time we saw him on Raw, August 26, 2019. Tonight was August 26, 2024. And he was back in the ring on Raw for the first time in 5 years. To the day. I'm sure they did not time it that way by accident. Drew McIntyre was out to the ring for the final hard sell for his strap match with CM Punk at Bash in Berlin. Speaking of Drew McIntyre, I'm glad I remembered this. I want to mention something that caught my eye earlier today. I love stuff like this, even though the actual match was just garbage. I've mentioned before, WWE has a second YouTube channel. It's called The Vault. And they've posted some very interesting things there in the last couple of months. They posted a new video earlier today. Drew McIntyre does the introduction for it. And what it is, and I didn't even know that they had this or I had forgotten about this. I think I knew about it previously. Drew McIntyre, when he was 21 years old, he had a dark match at a SmackDown taping in 2007. It was him and David Taylor. Remember Squire Dave Taylor from WCW, right? He had a little run in WWE. McIntyre and Dave Taylor against the Nasty Boys. So McIntyre did a little, you know, they got him in the back probably one day and he did a little intro for it. You could tell he's totally enthusiastic about this match. You know, he has wonderful memories about this fucking match. But he was promoting the tag team match against the Nasty Boys. And it's a famous match because the Nasty Boys showed up that night. They were completely out of shape or not in the shape that they had purported to be in, especially Brian Knobbs. Sags looked okay, but Brian Knobbs is Brian Knobbs. But it's famous because, again, they misrepresented themselves as far as the condition that they were in. This is 2007, so this is long after their prime. And they come out not to their traditional WWF music, but to their WrestleMania the Album theme, because I guess they didn't have the rights to the Jimmy Hart theme. So, you know, they come out for this match, and they were hot-dogging so much on their way out to the ring that it delayed the, or nearly delayed, I think, the start of the SmackDown taping. They had a rush because they were taking so long on their way to the ring. They were smacking hands with fans. They were acknowledging friends and family in the front row. Sags goes to the wrong side of the ring to climb the steps. He's in the fucking opponent's corner. They're like, your side of the ring is over there. Like, even before the bell rang, this was a disaster. And then the match itself was, it was what it was. They botched the finish. The finish was fucking horrible. But yeah, so that match, if you want to see it now, it's not the best quality, but it is up on their Vault channel. Drew McIntyre actually did a job for the Nasty Boys. Not only did he do a job for the Nasty Boys, he took a pit stop. And if you know about the Nasty Boys, you know what that is. I don't think you could pay me enough to take a pit stop from the Nasty Boys. But yes, no surprise that they were not invited back after that. Don't call us. We'll call you. Michael Cole said that McIntyre has only competed in one strap match in WWE, and he lost. And that is true. He had a strap match at Extreme Rules 2 years ago against Karrion Kross. And I think the big surprise about that, the thing that really surprised me the most, is that Karrion Kross actually won a match. Believe it or not. And it was against Drew McIntyre. McIntyre mocked Punk for boasting about the role that the company has been on, the business role that the company has been on, when he had nothing to do with it. He took issue with the fans continuing to chant for Punk and asked the fans if they know what an enabler is. He equated the fans chanting for Punk to handing a drink to an alcoholic. He said the fans would, which, by the way, I've seen that before. I was at the convention. It was the last Wrestle Reunion convention back in 2012 in Miami, the first WrestleMania I ever went to. Now, I'll never forget it. It was in the lobby, and Honky Tonk Man, the wonderful guy that he is basically, he was doing that with Jake Roberts because Jake was still, you know, Jake had not yet been saved by DDP and DDP Yoga. And he was on and off and on and off the wagon. But yeah, there was a scene in the lobby, I'll never forget it, where Honky Tonk Man was basically like forcing a drink on this guy. Oh, come on. Yeah, it was that kind of thing. I'm just like, really? Like, what a fucking asshole, you know? Anyway, he said the fans would have to live with the scars that he will leave on Punk's body. So CM Punk's music played. Punk appeared not in the aisle, but he showed up in the ring behind McIntyre and started whipping him with the leather strap. They fought out to ringside where McIntyre got the better of it. And he picked up the strap. He charged at Punk, who backdropped him onto the announce desk. And Punk got the strap, whipped McIntyre with it until security ran out to pull him away. And McIntyre hopped the barricade, got the hell out of Dodge. Punk and three security guards ended up in the ring, and Punk whipped the security guards with the strap and then tossed two of them out of the ring. I liked McIntyre's promo. I thought it was good, and I thought Punk showed good intensity here. No words. And, you know, Punk, you would think, you know, Punk is all about promos, right? You want to hear from CM Punk. CM Punk can sell you on a match just by talking. And we got no CM Punk promo here on the show, but I don't think we needed one, you know? I think everything that has needed to be said has been said at this point. It's time to fight. It worries me, though, because we know that this is going to go to a third match. We know that they're probably going to end up inside Hell in a Cell in October. And I do worry that because they've done practically all that they can do at this point, like, we're going to get through Berlin, we'll see what happens there. I mean, is there enough left to keep this really interesting for another 5 or 6 weeks after that? Like, are they going to have enough between now and Bad Blood on October 5th to really hold people's attention? My guess is yes, because, you know, it's Punk and McIntyre, right? So, you know, I'm sure they'll find a way to keep things interesting, but it's not just on them. Obviously, it's on Triple H. It's on creative. But you got to remember, they've been healing on each other and feuding for the entire year. You know, it can be hard to keep things interesting when you're this deep into this feud. I trust they will find a way to do so, but I am a little concerned that they may run out of gas before we get to Bad Blood. We had our first of two triple threat matches for the number one contendership for the Intercontinental title. So what they're doing, as I said earlier, they're doing two more next week. So we'll have four winners who will be a part of a four-way match, and the winner of that match will go on to challenge Bron Breakker at a later date for the Intercontinental title. Here, it was Jey Uso, Kofi Kingston, and Karrion Kross, who I just mentioned. Kingston went right after Kross, and Jey joined in, and Kofi got the better of an exchange with Jey, wiped out both men with a truss dive ahead of a commercial break. Late in the match, Kingston hit Jey with a Trouble in Paradise by accident after Kross ducked. Kross powerbombed Kofi for a two count. He then transitioned into a clover leaf, but Kofi reversed into a roll-up for a near fall. Kross knocked Kingston out of the ring with a right hand, and then Jey followed by spearing Kross and then hitting an Uso splash to advance to the fatal four-way in 2 weeks' time. Rikishi will be pleased. He will be very pleased to see the Yeet Man advance. I saw he was chattering again about his son, very upset about his booking in WWE right now. He has not held back in his opinions about it. So I'm sure he'll be very happy that Jey Uso is moving on here in this tournament. Although I am starting to think that unless Jey wins the tournament and then goes on to beat Bron Breakker and win the Intercontinental title, the way he's talking, Rikishi may end up taking out a contract hit on Triple H by the time this is all said and done. The match itself, I thought, was an average match. What I like about them doing these, though, is that in the past, we have seen them just throw together fatal four-ways to crown a number one contender. We're getting a fatal four-way, but at least these people have to earn the right into the match. So when you have matches like this on TV, two tonight, two more next week, they serve a purpose. They're not just, you know, randomly being put together, or the people in the four-way are just randomly assigned to it. At least people have to advance to get into the match. So they do serve a purpose, but this one was the weaker of the two that we had here on this show. They aired a quick promo backstage at a WWE live event in Belgium from Gunther, the World Heavyweight Champion, who was not actually physically present at the building tonight because he has been on tour. He was this weekend. But he sent in a video promo. By the way, he worked Ilya Dragunov at one of the shows on the tour. So how I wish I was there to see that. But it was a basic promo about how Randy Orton will finally meet his match on Saturday. That led to Randy Orton coming out to the ring for his final hard sell for the World Heavyweight Championship match at the Bash in Berlin. Orton said that he listened to the voices in his head for most of his career, but lately the voices he hears are the fans. And he says it meant the world to him that they sang his song, even if it took them 15 years to do it. So he thanked the fans. He said he's won a lot of titles in his career. The World Heavyweight Championship has meant the most to him because it was the first world title that he ever won, and he was the youngest to ever win it. Then he unified the two titles that they had at the time, which were the WWE title and the World Heavyweight title. And he was honored to do so. So that's a reference to when he beat John Cena back in 2013, and he unified the belts. And as it was in 2004, when he won the World Heavyweight title and he had his name engraved on the belt, when he beat John Cena to unify the titles and they retired the big gold belt, at that time, his name was the last name to be engraved on that belt. But that title was reborn last year while he was sitting at home on his couch recovering from spinal fusion surgery. Said he didn't know if he would be able to perform again, but he knew that if he did, he would do everything in his power to make sure his name was engraved on that belt once again. He wants to create a new legacy. Now, does he mean that he wants to create a new legacy for himself, or he wants to create a new legacy faction? Because he did used to have a little faction called Legacy. In fact, the champion on the other show was a part of that faction. He said he knew that he would be stepping into enemy territory in Berlin against the living legend to the people in Europe, in that part of the world. He said Gunther is a legend to them. But Gunther's head was shoved so far up his own ass, he didn't realize that he was facing the most dangerous wrestler this company has seen in the last 20 years. Orton signed his first WWE contract at 19 years old. He grew up in front of the fans. He learned from his mistakes, and he had to earn every ounce of respect that comes with his name. Gunther came into this company as a 30-something-year-old egotistical prick. He said that might be the only thing he and Gunther have in common. The difference between them was that Orton was humbled early in his career. Gunther has never been put in his place. And Orton planned on doing so in Berlin. This match could have just been about the title. It could have just been about the World Heavyweight Championship and nothing more. Gunther, though, had to go make it personal. He was right that Orton had demons, but those demons were tougher than Gunther. And Orton beat them all just like he would beat Gunther, and he would do it with an RKO. So I liked him drawing on the history with the World Heavyweight title specifically. Visually, even though it's two different title lineages, visually, it's the same, more or less the same title. Obviously, it looks a little bit different, but it's got that big gold design. And so drawing on that and talking about how important that is to him, because that was the very first belt he ever won when he won it at SummerSlam 20 years ago. 20 years ago. Damn. It really was. It was 20 years ago this month at SummerSlam that he won the World Heavyweight Championship. So I like that he put his own little personal spin on why this belt specifically has value to him and means something to him. We'll see if he still feels that way when he goes back to SmackDown and challenges Cody for the WWE title. In the absence of Gunther, who was physically not able to be on the show, I thought that Orton did a good job of summing things up, explaining to us why this means so much to him. And that's really all he had to do. Again, there's just, we've gotten to that point where there really is nothing left to say. There really is nothing left to do but go in there and just fight. Get in there, have the match, because we've reached the end of the road here. But I like that spin that he put on it. Then came, after this, the best thing on the entire show. This was my favorite part of Raw. I mentioned WrestleMania. And every WrestleMania weekend, there's all these different independent shows. You got all kinds of events going on. Usually, wherever WrestleMania is hosted, they have an event, and in the past, I know it's been usually at midnight, called Kaiju Big Battle. Well, you don't have to wait for WrestleMania. We got our Kaiju Big Battle here on this show because it was Big Bronson Reed one-on-one with Braun Strowman. Right from the opening bell, Braun Strowman came flying in with a shotgun dropkick to set the tone for what they were trying to do here in this match. Reed came back with a crossbody block off the middle rope. Strowman ended up at ringside where he got taken out by a Bronson Reed suicide dive. Reminded me of Samoa Joe, you know, even to this day, Samoa Joe, when he comes flying out of the, and Bronson Reed physically right now, I think is bigger than Joe, but it's still impressive to see Samoa Joe with that forearm come flying through the ropes. And that's what Bronson Reed did here. Reed put Strowman down with the DDT. He went up for the tsunami. Strowman though, cut him off and slammed him down to the mat. Strowman clotheslined Reed and then knocked him off his feet with a big boot. hoisted up Reed for a power slam, I think he was going for. But Reed slipped out, went to the apron. I will say, at this point in the match, both these guys were gassed, okay? They were leaning on the ropes. They were just kind of sitting and trying to catch their breath because they were going balls to the wall from the opening bell. So I'm not knocking them. It was just very noticeable at certain points here when they were in the ring for the early part of this that they were already kind of gassing out. Strowman grabbed Reed by the throat, though, while Bronson Reed was standing on the apron. Reed draped Strowman neck first, though, over the top rope to break the grip. And then he said, you know what? The hell with this. And Reed begins to walk to the back. So Strowman comes out after him and hits him, just clobbers him from behind. That was the last time, by the way, that we would ever see these two men in the ring. And there was no bell. There was no announcement, you know, no ding, ding, ding or anything like that. So I'm assuming it was just thrown out and it was a no contest. If it was a double count out, I think we would have heard a bell, but there was no bell. So Reed and Strowman, they fought on stage. Reed reversed the whip and sent Strowman into the LED boards, which glitched out. And then Reed went to the back and the camera followed him and he walked right through the gorilla position, through the curtain. He saw a garbage can, picked it up, stood there, and waited. He was waiting for Strowman to come walking through the curtain, and when he did, he threw the garbage can right at his head, and the fight continued. So Reed started to walk towards the parking lot. Strowman got back to his feet, and he starts throwing security dudes around who are trying to block his way. He grabs one of them, choke slams him through a catering table that just so happened to be sitting there. Reed and Strowman fought into the parking lot. Strowman grabs him by the throat, choke slams him onto the hood of a car. Strowman then picks up this giant steel beam. I don't even know where he got this fucking thing from, but remember the, like, many, many years ago, I think this was during his first run in the company, there was a scene with Brock Lesnar in the back. He had this giant square, I don't know what it was, some steel... It was like part of the set, and he was like, you know, benching it up and down. That's what Strowman grabbed, this giant steel beam, and he throws it. He hurls it at Bronson Reed, who's by the car. He dodges it, and it strikes the car. It looked like it hit the windshield, but the windshield didn't actually crack. Strowman then hit Reed with a shoulder block. This, I audibly gasped at this spot. He comes in, comes charging in, and he gives Bronson Reed a shoulder tackle. Reed is knocked up onto the hood of the car. He slides across the hood all the way off on the other side. And so when he slides off, he falls backwards right on the back of his head on the pavement. I mean, he got folded up. So think last night, if you saw All In and the end of the MJF match with Will Ospreay, when Ospreay dropped him on the back of his neck with the Tiger Driver, right? And he did it safely. He didn't drop him on his head, but he dropped him right on the back of his neck and he got folded up, right? That happened in the ring. That happened to Bronson Reed here on concrete. And Bronson Reed is at least 350 pounds. So that was a hell of a bump. And he's very lucky he didn't get hurt. But I saw that. I said, oh my God. Like, I audibly gasped out loud when I saw that. Because I thought he fucking bashed his skull on the ground. He was going to come up concussed or bleeding from the back of his head. He seemed to be okay. So after that rough landing, they climbed up on top of some equipment cases that were up because there was a concrete barrier, like a concrete wall with some bushes on top. And all the cars were parked there. But there were some equipment cases, so they climbed on top of those. Reed grabbed what looked like a pipe, and he smacked Strowman with it a couple of times. And Strowman ended up laid out on the trunk of the car. Oh, I'm sorry, not the trunk, on the roof. So he's laid out flat on the roof of this car. Bronson Reed, who's on these equipment cases, looks up and says, oh, I can climb up on the ledge right in front of the bushes. I can climb up on the ledge of this giant concrete wall. So like a kaiju, he climbs like a monster. He climbs on top of this wall, and then he dives off the wall onto Braun Strowman on the hood, on the roof. I said hood again, on the roof of this car, and smashes him, crushes him like a pancake, blows the side windows out. The windshield looked okay, but the side windows, the door windows, they got blown out. You see a little spark from what appeared to be the light on the inside of the car. It looked like it shorted out. There's smoke billowing from the hood of the car. It's smoking. The car is now smoking. Adam Pearce shows up. He's calling, get people out of here, you know, get the medics out here. And they went to commercial break. This was fun. If I had to sum this segment, if I had to sum this matchup in a word, this was fucking fun, is what this was. This is exactly what I was hoping to see from these two. They beat the hell out of each other. They brawled to the back. They brawled out of the building. And they gave us the big stunt bump there. Actually, two of them, I would argue, at the end. Honestly, the bump that Reed took sliding off the car onto the floor, to me, that was the roughest bump. That to me, even more than the tsunami off the fucking concrete wall onto the car. That's the one that made me go, oh my God. But the other one was very impressive, too. See, there were some rumors earlier in the day. WrestleVotes posted something, and I'm thinking, okay, he was alluding to there'd be some kind of big spot involving the two of them. I'm like, all right, come on. Like, we're going to get another ring collapse. Like, we haven't had enough of those over the years. I'm glad it wasn't a ring collapse. They thought outside the box. I thought the way this came off was tremendous. And you could hear it got a great reaction in the building. This was awesome. And here's the other aspect of this. We didn't get a winner. So that tells me that we're going to get one more match probably between these two so we can get a decisive winner. I like that. Bronson Reed did not have to win here. Given what they did, I think he came off as a monster, you know, well enough, but we had no decisive winner. So now they have set it up where we could get a second match between these two, although I don't know how they top what they did here on this show. But if Seth Rollins is going to be out for a little while longer, it's like, well, what do you do with Bronson Reed in the meantime? They set up another match with Braun Strowman perfectly, you know, based on how this segment went. So this was fucking great. Whoever came up with that idea, give him a raise, because this was very a creative way, I think, to showcase two big monsters. It's like they're like tearing up the city here. That's why I said Godzilla and King Kong. I mean, that's what it kind of reminded me of. This was my favorite segment of the entire night. Now, the other triple threat match in the Intercontinental title tournament included The Miz, Xavier Woods, and Pete Dunne. Miz hit Dunne with a codebreaker and a DDT. Actually, DDT both men at the same time. Miz tried a flying crossbody. Woods, though, rolled through. He caught him, but he rolled through with him. Hit some sort of a weird gut buster. Woods was wearing an armband that said Sid. And so at that moment, he looked down at his armband. And he grabbed Pete Dunne and he powerbombed him in tribute to Sid. He powerbombed Pete Dunne on top of The Miz. And when Dunne landed on Miz, it looked like his elbow hit Miz right in the nose. It's lucky he didn't break his nose. Miz came back, though, hit Woods with a skull-crushing finale, had the match won. Dunne tried to steal the win by throwing him out of the ring and trying to steal the pin. Miz, though, rushed back in to break up the pin. So that was a clever near fall there. Dunne put Miz in a crossface. Woods, though, super kicked both men. Xavier then hit a springboard elbow drop from one side of the ring to the other. Had the match won, but Dunne yanked the referee out of the ring. Dunne then booted Woods out of the ring and then hit Miz with the bitter end and picked up the win. Really solid match. Definitely the better of the two triple threats that we got on this show. So Jey Uso and Pete Dunne have advanced in this tournament. Next week, we get two more triple threats. One of them will have Sheamus, Ludwig Kaiser, and Bronson Reed. The other one will have Ilya Dragunov, Dragon Lee. So it's kind of like two dragons there. And Dominic Mysterio. I'm going with Sheamus and Dragunov to advance. I was leaning towards Dom just because I think they might want to have two heels, two baby faces. If they go with Sheamus and Dragunov, them plus Jey Uso, that's three baby faces and one heel and Pete Dunne, but I think Dragunov, at the very least, he moves on. I think he's got a really good shot at winning the whole thing. I'm not sure that Jey Uso is going to win. He'd have to be the favorite, but I don't think it's a slam dunk guarantee. Sheamus is not going to win. Sheamus is not going to win. Kaiser is not going to win. Dom, if you know, Dom's not going to win. I mean, I'm just trying to think of what match with Braun makes the most sense, and none of those names make sense. Jey Uso or Ilya Dragunov. I think it's going to be one of those two. Sheamus and Dunn, I think they kind of are going to cancel each other out in that fatal four-way, assuming Sheamus moves on. So that's what I'm thinking for the matches next week. The Sheamus thing, Sheamus will have his time to win the Intercontinental title. It doesn't feel like this is going to be that time. I don't think it should be. You know, at this point, you may as well hold off until WrestleMania. You can get a big WrestleMania match out of that. Tell that story. Tell that story. You know, we had Randy Orton in the ring tonight verbalizing what it meant to him to hold that World Heavyweight Championship and why that title was so special, why that means he wants to win this version of the title and why it's so important to him. When the time is right, Sheamus needs to also verbalize that to everybody who may not know that this is the only title or one of the only titles he's never held before. And, you know, when he was a young fan, that was the title he wanted to have. It's the one that has eluded him his entire career. And it would really be so special for him to be the Intercontinental Champion, but he's got to go through Bron Breakker to get it. That could be a WrestleMania match. You know, you don't blow through that match of bad blood. I'm sorry. The main event. Actually, before we get to the main event, Michael Cole and Corey Graves, they pay tribute to Psycho Sid, and they aired a memorial video for him, which they were able to turn around very quickly. They always do a good job with this stuff. Cole mentioned that when he first came to WWE in 1997, Sid was one of the first people to greet him and kind of show him the ropes, and he was very nice to him. The main event was Uncle Howdy making his in-ring debut against Chad Gable. I mentioned tonight being 5 years to the day of Bo's last TV match. His last match of any kind was at a live event later that same year in November of 2019. One of his opponents that night was Shorty G. Full circle. We've come full circle. So Uncle Howdy, he wrestled in a mask. He had a long gray wig clearly attached to the mask. You could actually see his real hair underneath. I said I had one critique about this match. If I had one critique, he's got to do something about that hair. It's just, it looks ridiculous. I'm sorry. He looks like a witch. I don't think, like, we have Abby the Witch, okay? He's not supposed to be Abby the Witch. So I don't see the need for him to have long gray hair like that. Plus, he's got long hair. You don't need a wig. You've got long hair already. Now, if he doesn't want to dye it gray, I understand that. But who says Uncle Howdy's hair has to be gray? You can do whatever you want. You could have your regular hair. It's fine. It was so long, too. Like, there's so much of it, and it was so long that it was covering his face, even at the very end, when they zoomed in after he won the match. You can't see the expression on his face. I mean, I know he's got a mask on, but, like, the mouth is cut out. You can't even see he can't express himself when his face is completely covered by hair. It looks like Cousin It from the Addams Family. So that's my only critique. It's got to do something about that hair. Cut it or change it or get rid of it. That's the only thing about the presentation and the look that I didn't really like. So at the very beginning of this match here, and he came out to Shatter. No surprise there. That I don't know what weird sound effect they were playing. You know what it was? It was the sound effect that first night the Wyatt Six murdered everybody in the back. It was like this rumbling noise that they were playing. I think they played it that night. They were playing that during the entrance music. They need to ditch that sound effect because it just doesn't work. But Howdy locked hands with Gable like they were going to dance. And he started dancing with him. in the ring at the beginning. Then he knocked him down with a clothesline. Howdy hit a power slam. Chase, they frightened Gable out of the ring, and they went to break about a minute into this with Uncle Howdy taunting Gable with the Luke Harper yeah, yeah, yeah chant. Gable suplexed Howdy out of the ring and hit a dive off the top. Howdy came back with a running hip attack into the barricade. And then Howdy, respecting the rules, slid back into the ring to break the referee's count. So that's another thing I like about Uncle Howdy. He's a stickler for the rules, which is good. I just think back to that Hell in a Cell match, that very first Fiend Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins, and there were no rules, and the less said about that, the better. But Uncle Howdy here, respecting the rules of the ring. Howdy chucked Gable over the announce table, then cleared the table off. Gable, though, hit him with an angle slam onto the table, which did not break. Howdy made it back into the ring at the count of nine. They went to the top. Gable hit an avalanche T-bone suplex for two. Gable followed with three German suplexes. He tried for the chaos theory, rolling German, but Howdy hung on to the top rope. And then he planted Gable with a hard Uranagi slam. Same one that Bray used to do. Howdy set up for Sister Abigail, but Ivy Nile distracted the referee, and that allowed Gable to apply an ankle lock. Howdy countered the ankle lock with a roll through that sent Gable hurtling forward into referee Rod Zapata, who took a bump. So we got a ref bump. Howdy applied the mandible claw to Gable. Creed Brothers, though, pulled Howdy out of the ring and tossed him into the timekeeper's barricade. But Uncle Howdy is sitting there, and he begins laughing. And the lights go out. Not totally, but, you know, mostly. You have the Wyatt family light gimmick where they go out. But then they come back on. The Wyatt family, the Wyatt Six, is there. They came through the crowd. They attacked the Creeds. And back in the ring, Howdy avoided a Chad Gable moonsault. He landed on his feet, but he got caught with Sister Abigail. Nobody sells Sister Abigail better than Chad Gable. Every single time so far, this is like the third time I think he's eaten a Sister Abigail, he sells it like death. I mean, he lands, looks like he lands right on his head. Like he got spiked. So he planted him with it, and he pinned him to win the match. After the match was over, Howdy outstretched his arms the same way that Bray Wyatt used to pose at the end of his matches. And they went off the air. A fine match, I thought, especially for the first time that Bo Dallas has been in the ring for a proper match in 5 years. I thought he looked good. Chad Gable was the perfect opponent for him. I wish he would stop losing, but he wasn't going to win this match tonight. Fans were very happy to see Howdy pick up the win. We'll see where they go from here with him. I'm sure this issue is not over. We'll probably get another match between them, is my guess. But as a first-time match, I thought it couldn't have gone better. Thought it was well-received. Crowd seemed receptive to it. Just the hair stuff is my only thing. Just change that. Just change that, and I think the presentation will be pitch perfect. But the Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman thing is really like the one big, like, you must go out of your way to see moment is from that match. The two triple threat matches, solid stuff. Orton promo, exactly what it needed to be. The McIntyre and Punk thing, exactly what it needed to be. If you want my predictions, I got a whole preview for Bash in Berlin. It's up right now from the most recent podcast. With my predictions for the show on Saturday, of course, I'll be planning on being live after that one too, just like I was for All In yesterday, which you should check that out if you missed the review. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of the Raw before Berlin? 77% thumbs up, 14.8% thumbs in the middle, and 8% thumbs down for tonight's show. Coincidentally, not only is Berlin a PLE coming up on Saturday, Berlin is a very good show on Netflix for those of you who would like to check out a new show. I recommend it. It's actually an offshoot of another show called Money Heist. But I think you would enjoy it even if you haven't seen Money Heist. It's basically like a prequel series for one of the characters. And it's in Spanish, so if you don't mind the subtitles. Very good show. Love me some Berlin. Super chat time. Again, I don't know if Colin is still with us, but shout out to Colin for the 50 bomb he dropped on me before we went live. I read his message earlier, so Colin, I thank you for a second time. Very much appreciated. Let me start with Prince Vegeta. With a $4.99, says, I know we have a lot of messages in regards to the Cid news. Says, rest in peace, Cid, the master and ruler of the world, the only man not in the Hall of Fame to have worn the winged eagle. Yes, indeed. You know, and I had to do a double check on that, too, because I was like, is that right? I mean, I thought it was, but, like, can that possibly be true? And it is, sadly. All the people that held that version of the championship are in the Hall of Fame and not him. And you know what's even sadder about it is there was an interview that somebody did. It looked like he was in a store, probably doing a signing. And Cid stood there for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes doing an interview with this podcast. I forget the name of it. And he was talking about different things. And again, this was just last month. And they asked him about the Hall of Fame. And he actually said that now that Vince McMahon was out of there, because he thinks Vince just didn't like him. Maybe Triple H and the company would be more receptive to, you know, putting him in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he was hoping to go in, and he'll go in. He'll go in eventually, but kind of like Vader, he won't be around to enjoy it, unfortunately. Boots says, rest in peace to the master and ruler of the world. Colin, again, thank you for the 50. Bones Jones, I saw Cid live in 96. He beat Bulldog in 10 seconds. I think Cid and Bulldog, that was the SummerSlam match, I believe, right? In 96? Telling you, man, that run, whatever it was about that run, Cid was super over. Just unbelievably over. Red hot during that run. Yvonne Padilla. Hello, Solomonster. How did the crowd sound? I was there. Crowd was good for parts of the show and quiet for other parts. I wouldn't say that it was hot for everything, but the stuff that they weren't hot for, there was no reason to be hot for. So they were good. I thought the crowd was good. Donnie Yasu, proud of my city, not letting Dom speak tonight. Jerome, thank you for the 5. Rest in peace, Sid Justice. Was he the first one to ever kick out of Hogan's atomic leg drop? In WWE, yes. Yes, he was. LC Killer, 17. Although, I should say, he wasn't supposed to. That's the WrestleMania 8 botch. Not his fault. But he was not supposed to kick out of the leg drop. But he had no choice. So yes, he was the first. LC Killer 17 says, RIP Cid, you will be missed. Yes, indeed. Let me scroll back here on this list. See where this picks up. Hey, Pisco 95. What's going on, Pisco? Kevin Owens' contract is set to expire later this year. Do you see him staying in WWE or going to AEW? He is good friends with the Bucks. He was good friends with the Bucks 3 years ago when he re-signed with them, and doesn't mean that he's going to go to AEW. Didn't mean he was going then. He's not going now. There's no reason for Kevin Owens to leave WWE. So, no, I do not see him going to AEW. Let's see here. I'm going to make sure I didn't think there were some that came in before his. Nope, we're all caught up. Okay. So let's pick up with Steve Joseph. What's going on, Steve? Do you still think Ludwig Kaiser would still have a match on the pay-per-view? No. No, and I'm surprised by that. I thought for sure he would. I'm hoping at the very least he'll come out with Gunther for the main event. But it's pretty clear he ain't going to have a match on that show. And I think that sucks. Jonathan Bordeaux. I don't know shit, crybaby. What a wild night that was. Another fond memory. That night on Raw 97. I'll talk more about Sid and his career and different moments on Sunday. Base beer is suddenly I'm deadly. Rest in peace. Y2 Ken with the 12. I was such a Sid fan, especially in 96 and 97. His theme was a masterpiece. It's always softball season in heaven. Jonathan Bordeaux again. Oh my God, what happened to my car? Goldberg. Oh, the comedy of that segment. Poor guy coming out and seeing his car crushed like a pancake. And then standing there, I mean, this was cinema. People say, oh, the bloodline is cinema. No, you want to see cinema. You haven't seen cinema until you see Sid Vicious realizing his car has been, his rental car has been destroyed. And standing on it, screaming up at the heavens, Goldberg, like the Wrath of Khan, you know? That's great television right there. Foxstar Killer says, 22, oh man, Moses, you idiot. Goldberg, where are you? Why me? Why me? Why me? Oh, man. Paul Carpenter, go back and watch Monday Night Raw Psycho Sid versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Bret Hart interferes at the end, but it's probably 5 minutes of great action. And then there's also Sid against Bret, where Austin interferes and costs Bret the title. That's how Sid became a two-time champion. It's also where Austin hurt his knee the first time. SMC or SM... why do I always say that wrong? S. McPhee. Fuck me, man. S. McPhee. There you go. On your SmackDown 25, I remember Eddie versus Edge for Eddie getting over. His work and the sunset flip off the ladder garnered him chance, and he was the heel. Yeah, I mean, that was a great match. It was a breakout match in many ways for Edge. But as I mentioned in the countdown, it's also the match where he suffered the initial injury that eventually led to him needing neck surgery. So it came with a price. Face Beerus, underrated SmackDown moment. JBL, tranquilized, and the dinosaur balloon in the ring. Not sure if it was on your list. I'm only halfway through it. No, it wasn't. Nor was the blow dart that Kurt Angle, the tranquilizer dart that he shot into Big Show. That was also a SmackDown moment. That was not on my list, though. DEH Sires, Triple H needs to do something about the women's division. It's ice cold, especially when 80% of the women's world title feuds have involved Dominic. Well, maybe he should hold the title. Maybe Dominic should be the women's world champion. He's got the hair for it. Hisco 95. An underrated SmackDown moment for me. When Triple H crashed Edge and Vicky Guerrero's wedding. Back then, Edge was the top heel in WWE, and I loved seeing him get screwed. It also led to the world, to the Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker. There's also the wedding where Teddy Long was going to marry Crystal Marshall. Then he had a heart attack and he died. Remember that? Or when Al Wilson. I mean, what great television that was, right? Al Wilson and all the segments with him and Dawn Marie. DEH Sires. If you go by name, the roster is full of talented women. But Triple H chooses three women for each brand to push and the rest are just pin eaters. Jeremy Rose, how far is this Bronson push going to go? IC title. If it was anybody but Bron Breakker, I would say yes. If Sami Zayn was still the Intercontinental Champion, I would say yes. But they're not going to beat Braun for that belt, at least until WrestleMania. I don't see him dropping it before then. And heel doesn't really work. How far the push goes, I'm sorry to say, I think when Rollins comes back, he hits that brick wall. And you know, losing to a big name like Seth Rollins is not a killer. The key is the follow-up. When he finally loses and he's beaten, does he just sort of fade back into the middle of the card and into the background? Or does Triple H really have a plan to keep him kind of, you know, in that realm? I hope he does. I really hope they can use this as an opportunity to truly elevate him. Elevating him to wrestle Seth Rollins and then lose and go back to where he was before, that's not an elevation. An elevation is where he comes out of this in a better position than he was coming into it. That's what I'm hoping for. Jimmy White says, Raw was fun in person tonight. Glad I went. Yeah, they said it was packed too. They said it was sold out. Phoenix Downs, shout out to Solomonster, the most unbiased wrestling podcaster. I am already predicting that Bron Breakker is your 2026 Royal Rumble winner. Phoenix, thank you. And I'm going to disagree. I don't see Bron winning the Royal Rumble. I do think he will win the Royal Rumble at some point. Maybe more than one. 2026 will not be his year, though. Base Beer is SmackDown moment. MVP against Matt Hardy in basketball. Buy or sell, Gremlins or Trolls? Gremlins. I got a Gizmo doll around here somewhere. I'm a Gremlins guy. Retro KOH, let's troll solo. Howdy against Gable in a lights out Hell in a Cell of Bad Blood. Ends in a no contest, of course. Oh, of course. And it would be so appropriate, too, because Bad Blood this year is the day before my birthday. It's the weekend of my birthday. That awful Hell in a Cell 5 years ago was actually on my birthday and ruined my birthday. So it would almost be the same thing. Yeah, let's not do that. Alex says, was there a specific reason why Vince never allowed Nigel McGuinness to perform as a competitor during his 6-year WWE run? I don't think Nigel was cleared, or it just never came up. You know, even if he was able to get medically cleared, which I would imagine at that point there was nothing stopping him from being medically cleared. I mean, the hepatitis, yeah, that cleared up many years ago. I just think they had him in mind as an announcer, and that was it. They didn't, you know, have any interest in him as an in-ring performer. Simple as that. You know, Corey Graves has said that he has gotten medically cleared. He could get back in the ring tomorrow to have a match if he wants to. Either he chooses not to, or the company just doesn't have a need for him to be in the ring. He's more valuable to them on commentary. So it was probably a very similar situation with Nigel. Nick Grasso with the $9.99. Rest in peace, Psycho Sid Vicious. I saw him wrestle at the first wrestling show I ever went to. It was a WWF house show in late 96. He was in the main event against The Undertaker for the world title. It's very cool. I saw Sid live many times. Prince Vegeta. A memorable Sid match was sold out 2000 when he fought Stevie Richards for the vacant WCW World title. Stevie jumped ship to WWF the following day. Ah, yes, I remember it well. The Ferocious with the $5. Rest in peace, Sid. When I first started watching wrestling, I remember the whole Psycho Sid is coming to town Christmas song. I have no memory of that. Alex says, are there any AEW originals that you can see finish their career in WWE and get into the WWE Hall of Fame? Oh, I don't know about the Hall of Fame, but yeah, there'll be AEW originals that end up in WWE. MJF will be one of them. I think Sammy Guevara will eventually be one of them. I think Wardlow will be another. Firepen to Hell in a Cell 2019 review is just one long rant, and it is glorious. Peak pissed off Solomonster. Well, I'm glad I don't have to be so pissed off about everything anymore. Alex says, I am shocked that you did not put the reveal of Jillian's mole and Brock beating Kofi in a squash in your top 25 list. Those were awful moments, all jokes aside. I did think about putting Brock rolling Zach Gowen in the wheelchair down the stairs. I just ran out of spots on the list. If it was a top 30, though, you can bet your ass it would have made that list. And then his just psychotic laugh at the very end. And Jeremy Rose, do you think Jacob Fatu is really hurt, or does he wear the boot to look like a badass? I mean, since when does wearing a walking boot make someone look like a badass? He looked like a badass without it. My guess is he wasn't seriously hurt. He was banged up. And as a precautionary measure, they put him in a walking boot. That's why he's able to still go out there and get physical and throw super kicks and do Samoan drops. So I think he is mostly fine, but he probably did get banged up on that show. As Triple H said at the post-show press conference, that's exactly what he said, that he was banged up. Arabian Knight 2000 with the 5. Hey, Arabian Knight, thank you. You feel if Triple H took over 1 or 2 years prior, most of his built-up stars in NXT would have stayed and not gone to AEW, which is more like Black and Gold now, ironically. Oh, for sure. Yeah, no. I mean, if things had been different in the company as far as the power structure there, there are definitely people who would have stayed. Triple H would have fought for them to stay. They would have felt more comfortable staying. Adam Cole being one of them, Keith Lee being another, for sure. Not a doubt in my mind they would have stayed. And probably others too. But those are the two that really stand out to me. Malakai Black is another one. I think they would still be in WWE right now on the main roster. Base Beerus, Inglourious Basterds, or Django Unchained. Man, two great movies, but I will always favor the movie where a bunch of Nazis get fucking slaughtered, so Inglourious Basterds gets my vote. But they're both great movies. All right, we're sitting at 432 likes. Thank you very much. Keep hitting that like button. And let us be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. Did not have a great be the booker yesterday for the all-in recap. So hopefully we can have a nice little rebound here. Let's hope. Baby Dragon is a Yu-Gi-Oh card? How the hell am I supposed to know that? Thank you for filling me in. I had no idea. I thought that was a reference to something else. All right, we begin with the Mean Street Posse. We got Pete Gass. We got Rodney. And we got Joey Abs. I like the Mean Street Posse. I like their music, too. Just perfect douche heel music. It just suited them so well. It's almost like they had somebody doing entrance music at the time who actually knew what he was doing and could tap into these different characters and personalities and make them come to life in ways that nobody else has been able to figure out since he left the company. Mean Street Posse are going to take on the mega powers of Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man, Randy Savage. The mega powers and the Mean Street Posse. I mean, the squash of all squashes, of course. But come on, man. I can't hate on that. You could tell me that wouldn't be entertaining? You know it would be. Hey, Omen Crimson. You came in at just the right time, brother. Welcome to the channel. We have landed on all red everything. Eva Marie has returned to be the booker. Oh no. Oh no. All red everything and Ruby Soho. Ah. And I had such high hopes for tonight. I had such high hopes, and they have been flushed down the toilet. All right. Main event time. Ah, look at this. We got Jushin Thunder Liger. The man, the myth, the legend himself. Liger in the main event, where he belongs. Can't go wrong with Jushin Thunder Liger now. Liger one-on-one with Devil's Choice. Now, wait a minute now. Hold on a second here. Hold on a second. Keep or replace the man that you just picked. I just put over Liger in such a big way. I mean, I don't know. I mean, part of me is like, you know what? Maybe we should take that gamble and see who we land on and pick a different person. You know what? I think we're going to do that. I love Liger. I'm going to risk it. We were headed for a bell. I'm going to risk it. We're going to start from scratch and pick a different person. Okay. Hopefully I made the right decision. Not bad. Not bad at all. Razor Ramon. We are starting with Razor Ramon. Not bad. The bad guy, Razor Ramon. One-on-one with John Cena. Razor Ramon and John Cena. If only Scott Hall could have actually taught John Cena how to throw a proper worked punch. Scott Hall had one of the best worked punches in all of wrestling. If only he could have mentored John Cena. Well, you know what? We ended strong, and that's all that matters. We might not have gotten a clean sweep, but we ended on a high note. You can thank Eva Marie for screwing it all up. Grant Hudson. I remember 11-year-old me being so happy when Sid came back during the Raw 1000 build and squashed Heath Slater. Rest in peace, the master and ruler of the world. I remember that. He was in jeans and he was chewing gum the entire time and just powerbombed them like it was nothing. Retro KOH, buy or sell, SummerSlam 02 or All In 2024. Both took place on my birthday. Loved both shows. Yeah, I love both shows too. I'm a big fan of SummerSlam 02. I probably would go SummerSlam. SummerSlam had Rock and Brock in the main event, which was a great match. I love that. Shawn Michaels return against Triple H, which was a great street fight. And Kurt Angle against Rey Mysterio in that opening match. One of the greatest opening matches in the history of that company. And those are the key ones. I think Jericho wrestled Flair on that show too. But those are the three that really stand out to me. All In, you know, we had Bryan Danielson and Swerve Strickland, which was a five-star match. I mean, I love that main event last night. MJF and Will Ospreay, outstanding match. Tony Storm and Mariah May, also very good. I enjoyed that as well. So I really love both shows. Again, I might lean towards SummerSlam because I have a love for that show. You can't go wrong with either one, though, but you put me on the spot. I'll buy on SummerSlam, but All In, the key matches at All In, men, were great. that main event last night is going to be a tough one to top when it comes to the match of the year conversation. If you missed it, by the way, the full review is up for the 2.5 hours that you guys spent with me yesterday. Those of you who were with me, I thank you. If you missed it, go back and check it out. I'm going to be back with you on Wednesday night because we have the live Dynamite post-show, the post-all-in edition of Dynamite to talk about. And then, of course, SmackDown in Berlin on Friday. We have Bash in Berlin on Saturday afternoon. Tomorrow night, I'll be over on JD's channel for a new Tuesday Night Titans. So you got plenty of content to go around this week. So when you support, I appreciate it. Everybody who dropped the super chat, thank you very much. Foxstar Killer, what if The Rock stuck around after SummerSlam 02? Well, they would have had another big star on their roster. That's what would have happened. I mean, Brock went over to SmackDown. Triple H ran Raw. So I think Rock would have been on SmackDown. Rock would have been a part of the SmackDown. It would have been the SmackDown 7. You would have had Rock. It would have been the SmackDown 7. Paul Heyman, head writer of SmackDown when Rock was there, that would have been something. Who would Rock have worked with post-Brock? That's an interesting question. Maybe we would have gotten a Rock and Edge feud. Hey, Base Beerus, thank you, man, for being a member. He's been a channel member for 20 months. Shout out to all the channel members. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great night. Hit that like button on your way out. And I will see you back here for the Dynamite post show on Wednesday. Go check out my SmackDown top 25 list. You got an hour to kill. Go check out the list. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think of it. I'll see you guys back here on Wednesday night. Take care.